You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM Madison.
Hello, this is Julie Candler with the BBC News. The Chinese Space Agency has launched a rocket carrying a probe that will aim for the first time to collect samples from the far side of the moon and return them successfully to Earth. Jason Lee reports.
The Chang'e 6 mission, named after China's moon goddess, blasted off from the Wenchang Space Launch Center in southern Hainan province. Taking 53 days to complete, the unmanned spacecraft will attempt to make a soft landing on the South Pole Aitken Basin, one of the largest known impact craters in the solar system. It's part of China's ambitious space program that's seen rapid progress in the last decade under President Xi Jinping. Last month, NASA warned that China's aggressive space development meant that Washington was now in a new space race against Beijing.
The U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin has confirmed that Russian troops are now operating in an airbase in Niger that's hosting U.S. military personnel. Mr. Austin said the Russians were in a separate compound in the capital Niamey.
The Russians are in a separate compound and don't have access to U.S. forces or access to our equipment. And this is something that, you know, again, I'm always focused on the safety and the protection of our troops, something that we'll continue to watch. But right now, I don't see a significant issue here in terms of our force protection.
Niger's military rulers, who came to power in a coup last year, have asked the U.S. to withdraw its almost 1,000 troops based in the country. Top Indian wrestlers have criticised Prime Minister Narendra Modi's party for fielding the son of their former federation chief in national elections, despite his father being charged with sexually harassing female wrestlers. Here's our South Asia regional editor, Anbrasan Itirajan.
A celebrated Olympic medal-winning female wrestler, Sakshi Malik, said by giving an election ticket to Brijbhushan Singh's son, the BJP had shattered the aspirations of India's millions of daughters. Karan, the son of Mr. Singh, is standing as the BJP candidate in Kaisarganj constituency in Uttar Pradesh, a seat his father has won 6 times. In January, police filed charges against Mr. Singh after several women wrestlers accused him of sexual harassment when he headed India's top wrestling body. He denies wrongdoing and is currently on bail.
The International Criminal Court's Prosecutor's Office has called for all attempts to impede, intimidate or improperly influence officials to cease immediately. The statement does not name specific cases, but comes as the Israeli authorities and some US politicians have criticised an ICC investigation into alleged war crimes committed during the conflict between Israel and Hamas. Neither Israel nor the US is a member of the court. World News from the BBC.
Attention WORT volunteers and donors. WORT is holding an election for 2 open participating member seats and 1 open listener sponsor seat to serve 3-year terms on the board of directors of Back Porch Radio Broadcasting, Inc., with terms beginning at the annual meeting in June and concluding at the annual meeting in June 2027. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 30th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 30th. More information and board applications are available at WORTFM.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Arts and Literature Laboratory, Madison's community-based contemporary arts center located at 111 South Livingston Street. Arts and Literature Laboratory houses an art gallery and performance space, a writing center and library, artist studios, and a dedicated education studio, which features classes for all ages. Information about current exhibits, performances, and classes, and how to get involved as a member or volunteer is available at artlitlab.org or on social media at artlitlab.
morning, everyone. Hello there. My name is Colleen Hayes. Nope, I'm not Andy Moore. Andy Moore, my favorite Louisvillian. He's not a villain, but he's from Louisville. And I think he's down in Kentucky. I saw a really cute photo with him and his sister Molly. He's out of town, so he's letting me guest host today's edition of the 8 o'clock Buzz. It is Friday, May 3rd. Thanks, Andy Moore, for leaving town and giving me this opportunity. I mean, we want you to come back, although Encore said you should leave more often if I'm going to bring that batch bakehouse that I brought along. Anyhow, you are listening to the 8 o'clock Buzz. Thanks, everyone. And thanks to all the folks here helping me out today. And I mean really helping me out today. I'll begin with Shali, even though she's not here, but she really talked me through this. And thanks to Jim Wilson, who is guiding me here in the studio, to Encore, out to Elliot manning the reception desk, and Elliot. You guys should get to know Elliot. I don't really know Elliot, and he's a pretty smart guy. And of course, Aaron Schultz, who's going to help us later on today. We're going to have at the end of the show, we're going to have a segment outside where we're going to be doing some bike safety checks. So we're going to talk you through over the air. I know that sounds a little, you know, odd, or how can you fix your bike just by listening to the radio? But we've got a really expert mechanic, so I think she's gonna do it. So let's get started now with our first guest this morning. We have from the Wisconsin Bike Fed, the Dane County Youth Education Program Manager, Natalie. Oh, I meant to ask Natalie before, because I've been working with Natalie for like over a year. And I meant to say, Natalie, is it Shad or Shod? I've never actually asked you that.
Technically, it's Shod, but I'll respond to either.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, Natalie Shod, as I've come to learn today, is the Dane County Youth Education Program Manager for the Wisconsin Bike Fed. She coordinates the Safe Routes to School programming throughout Dane County. She is a certified league cycling instructor with the League of American Bicyclists and teaches mostly kids and the occasional adult bike safety skills. So Natalie, well, I should say that May is National Bike Month, as Natalie knows, and many of you probably listening might know that. Madison Bike Week isn't until June 1st through the 8th. Madison Bikes, if you go to madisonbikes.org, you can learn about Madison Bike Week, June 1st through 8th. But during National Bike Month is National Walk and Roll to School Day, which is happening this Wednesday, May 8th. So, Natalie, tell me about that. What is National Walk and Roll to School Day? I assume you just walk or roll to school. So what is that?
Yeah, you can bike, you can walk, you can scooter, you can skateboard, anything on wheels to get you to school. It's a day to celebrate active transportation and walking to school, biking to school, being fit in our community. It's a national day, so schools all around the country celebrate. And it's just to really encourage kids to get active before school and think about how they can incorporate active transportation into their commute.
Excellent. And so do any of our Madison schools or Dane County schools?
You've lived in Madison. You know that we're all about walking and biking here in Madison. Yes, some schools do participate. You can do tons of different events. We're going to go to schools next week to celebrate. We're going to pass out stickers and slap bracelets that they shouldn't hit each other with and do some bike safety checks, make sure their tires are pumped up. You can really celebrate in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I'm excited because I do get to, so I should also say, which I did have written in the script, you know, you do a script for this show, it turns out, which I didn't realize, because not to dig on Tony Castaneda, but I do sometimes see him late on a Wednesday at a certain neighborhood establishment, and I'm thinking, you have a script, but he must, because he sounds like just so bright-eyed on Thursday mornings. But in the script, I was going to say that my job, when I'm not volunteering here at Wart, is I work with the City of Madison as the Pedestrian Bicycle Outreach Specialist, which sounds very, very fancy, but really is just like an opportunity to hang out with kids and walk and bike safely. And so I do get to do a lot of work with Natalie, and I'm excited because on Wednesday, well, remind me, where are we going on Wednesday?
I think we're going to be at Mendota Elementary.
Oh, yes, Mendota Elementary. They're actually a very fun school. We're going to go to Mendota. We were just there this past Wednesday walking with kids. And then later on, actually, I'm going to be with Ben, your high school counterpart. We're going to go to East High School and do bike safety checks over at East High School during lunchtime and after school on Wednesday. So that should be fun. So, okay. So,
and I should say, you can celebrate Walk and Bike and Roll to School Day any day in the month of May. It doesn't just have to be on the 8th.
Okay.
And if you want to, if you're a parent or a school that's listening in for some reason because you're not actively teaching right now, you can go to walkbiketoschool.org and learn about more of how to plan events.
Right. And that actually, I would say, give a plug too for if you are a parent or teacher or school community member that wants to get more kids walking or biking to school and you need assistance with it, that's something that Natalie does and that I do. And so you can contact either one of us. Natalie is at natalie@wisconsinbikefed.org.
Correct.
Wow, I got that just off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. That's really good.
That's because we email a lot.
Yeah. And she can help you get more kids walking and biking. Okay, so here's the thing, though. I was just doing a little research. I didn't want to have to put too much work into it. I'm no Andy Moore. But, you know, I was seeing that nearly 50% of American kids walked or biked to school in 1969 was a statistic I heard, and that today the figure is about 13%. So what in the heck happened?
I think a lot of things happened. You know, schools used to be built, you know, closer to their town centers, and so the distance was less that kids had to travel to school. I think over the years, we've also become more reliant here in the U.S. on motor vehicles to get around. And so as motor vehicle traffic increases, parents often become more concerned that it's unsafe for their children to walk and bike to school. And so they begin driving them to school, and then it's adding more traffic to the roads. And thus, you know, it's this self-perpetuating cycle where there's more vehicle traffic, so people think it's unsafe to walk and bike. And even some schools have prohibited children from walking and biking to school because of this safety issue that they perceive. So I think there's been a lot of reasons, but maybe it's all chalked up to our American dream of owning a car.
Yeah. Okay, I did get a little bit of Ben Varick in this too. I like this. I like this. Ben is our high school. That is actually good news for the Wisconsin Bike Fed. They recently received a grant where they're now able to also do Safe Routes programming at the high school level. And a new member of the Wisconsin Bike Fed, who was going to be here this morning but is out of town, is doing some programming at the high school level, Ben. So that's, you know, another great addition, especially I was going past actually West High School and saw that they have brand new bike racks, which was really great, and they're full. So, you know, kids do want to walk and bike to school. And so what are some things, I mean, so you touched on that a little bit about just parents, you know, kids are maybe living further away from their schools, parents not feeling like it's safe for kids to be walking or biking. I was at a lecture last week with this woman, Ann Carlson, I think was her name. She's an environmental lawyer and was the former acting administrator for the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. But one thing she said that was really sobering and frustrating to me was that, I mean, this is good. Kid fatalities have decreased. But it was mostly because less kids were walking and biking to school. So there was less of a chance of them getting killed by a driver. Mm-hmm. So what, you know, what can, I mean, what can we do to help that? I mean, what is the Bike Fed doing anything? What kind of advocacy are they working on?
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of that cycle where as you get into your car more, it becomes more of a routine to drive your kids to school and drive everywhere. And part of that is then there's reduced amounts of pedestrians and bicyclists, but there really is this safety in numbers where if more kids and people were walking and biking, they would be more visible and drivers in school zones would be more aware that there are kids crossing the street and maybe they want to check twice before they really merge into that traffic lane. One of the main things that we can help do is advocate for infrastructure improvements around schools and make it safer for kids to walk and bike. behind distance being one of the barriers, parents perceive a level of traffic safety. And if they perceive that it's dangerous, they're not going to let little 7-year-old cross the street by themselves. So if you can improve intersections around school, add higher visibility crosswalks, add traffic calming like speed bumps or traffic circles, and lower the speed and volume of cars on the roads near schools, that can really potentially increase kids walking and biking to school. Another piece is this education aspect. If you can teach kids how to safely cross the street and watch out for errant drivers that are texting on their phone or listening to the radio and not paying attention, that education piece is important to teach those safety skills. But ultimately, it's the infrastructure improvements and reducing those barriers that can help kids walk more to school. And we know that kids that live in more walkable and bikeable neighborhoods have these all ages and abilities networks, protected bike lanes, off-street paths. Those are the best things we can do to get kids biking to school.
Yeah, and I think probably, I'm guessing, that when kids show up to school, if they've been walking or biking, they might be having a better day at school. Is it just a guess?
Correct.
What do you think, Natalie?
Yeah, I do think so. Children who walk to school get 3 times as much moderate to vigorous physical activity during their walk to school than during recess. And I think we've seen in the classroom, too, that after they've gone for a walk, students complete learning tasks and cognition more quickly and accurately than those of their counterparts that didn't. So this like activity in the morning is really important to get kids focused and ready to learn and get all their little wiggles out before they're in the classroom and trying to focus on math and science and reading. And beyond that, it's also that social connection. If you're walking to school with a friend or walking with your parent, you're having that quality time together, building that connection where you might not get that if you're in the backseat of a car alone.
Right. Yeah. I think that's so true. And I just noticed whenever, you know, Natalie and I go to elementary schools a lot and do walking school buses and or walk to school days, we do a winter walk to school day, which is very fun, and hand out what we try not to be scalding hot chocolate to children. And it's just so funny because, you know, even when it's 10 degrees out, it seems kids are still having fun walking to school if they have the opportunity and the means and they have folks who are encouraging it and maybe are able to kind of give them a little bit of a boost and, you know, encouragement to walk to school. And I recall last year with Caitlin, your predecessor, we did a Tuesday morning walking school bus with kids from East Madison Community Center. And we'd walk through the tunnel under East Washington. And it was just like a blast. Like we had so much fun, even on the mornings when it was some mornings it was sub-zero because you're out there at 7 a.m. because it was all school year long. How can families, and I get requests sometimes from families wanting to do a walking school bus, or they think they should do a walking school bus or a bike bus. And sometimes I just say, well, you're already doing it. You know, the kids in my neighborhood, I live near O'Keefe Middle School and Marquette Elementary, and there's a ton of kids that bike together. I see them all the time biking together. And that's, you know, a bike bus doesn't have to be anything fancy, and a walking school bus doesn't have to be anything fancy. But does Safe Routes to School have any resources for families that might want to think about starting a walking school bus at their school?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely get in touch with me if you're interested. That's natalie@wisconsinbikefed.org. But it's definitely talking to your neighbors and talking, if you're a community school, talking to your community school folks, talking to teachers, other kids, parents, and building that parent connection and neighbor connection of, if you see that your neighbor down the street is walking to school, maybe you can trade off who walks the kids to school. You can get 15 minutes of your day and trade off that way and do an informal walking school bus. In an ideal world, we would pay people to be walking school bus drivers, so to speak. But unfortunately, that's not the resources that we have. But we've got some high-vis umbrellas if you're walking in the rain. We've got some, honestly, they look like cat toys, but they're little ribbons with bells if you want to be more visible that way and have fun on your walk to school. But I'm always available to help with like route planning and finding out some safe intersection crossings if you're interested in that.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, I've noticed one of the biggest barriers sometimes is it's very easy. It can be easy to walk or bike to school if you just know the safer, any route is correct, I guess. But if you can find the safer route to school, and I found, even with biking with kids, it might put on like 3 minutes extra to your bike commute, but you'll be a lot happier and peaceful when you get to school or work. So that's something you would be able to do, is kind of map a route for
definitely
walking school buses.
I know some schools use walking school buses to increase their attendance, so they're getting kids to school that way. And so it's that consistency. And if you know where the kids are living that need a little boost walking to school, it's helpful to plan a route through their neighborhoods and pick them up along the way, create some morning cheer, and hopefully use a sidewalk or a crosswalk or a crossing guard if there's one around.
Yeah, and I've noticed that's a hard, we did the Walking Wisdom, which is the Wisconsin Bike Fed's pedestrian curriculum to teach elementary school kids. And they, when we were at Hawthorne Elementary, we were crossing the street, and you'd cross the street and then there would be no sidewalk, because then it was, Blooming Grove or?
Yeah, just a neighborhood that didn't have sidewalks.
And so there were no sidewalks. So what do you do with a kid then? Do you just like throw them to the wolves or?
Well, ideally not, but part of that is teaching, if there is no sidewalk, the safest place to be is actually on the left side of the road, walking against traffic. It seems counterintuitive sometimes, because when you're biking in the road, you should absolutely ride with traffic, because as a cyclist, you're a vehicle, you should ride on the right. But then when you're walking, you should walk on the left so you can face traffic and be more visible that way. So, and always, if you're a little kid listening out there, walk with a parent until you're ready to walk by yourself.
Yeah, that is important. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Natalie Shad, maybe Shad, but Natalie Shad, from the Wisconsin Bike Fed Safe Routes to School programming. Natalie, you and I have done a few number of programs of these Walking Wisdoms and bike clubs and various we've ridden around the lake with a bunch of sixth graders, which if anyone ever, Jim Wilson, I can hopefully see you smiling over there, and we're going to force you now next year. Now that we know you, you are coming on a bike ride around Lake Monona with a bunch of sixth graders. So be prepared. We stopped for ice cream at the Monona Bait Shop. Shout out to Dean there. He's very generous. Opening up for us. But what are some fun stories? And do you have any, without throwing any kids under the bus or,
I would never want to throw a kid under a bus. Why would you say that?
Oh, yeah.
No, I think one of the highlights, at least from last summer with our bike education programming that we do, was when we were at Warner Park Community Rec Center and with a camp there, and we were practicing using our gears, because, that's a skill you need to learn. So we were practicing going up a hill and shifting down. And then, of course, when you go up, you have to ride down.
That's right.
And so we're in Warner Park. It's beautiful. Dust bunnies or dandelions are flying through the air. And one kid's riding down the hill, having the time of their life. And they get to the bottom and they say, wow, that was better than Disney World. And I don't think I'm going to throw up after. Which I think is just a glowing endorsement of how much fun you can have on a bike, that you don't need to take your kids to Disney World. You just need to take them on a bike ride.
Okay. Yep. Folks, if you were thinking, should I let my kid walk or bike to school? I think that right there you're correct, a glowing endorsement. So I'm talking here with Natalie. Thanks, Natalie, for joining us this morning. Natalie is the Safe Routes to School Youth Education Program Manager for the Wisconsin Bike Fed here in Dane County. If you are interested in learning more about Safe Routes to School programming within Dane County, you can feel free to drop her a line at Natalie, that would be N-A-T-A-L-I-E, at wisconsinbikefed.org, and she can help you out. So thanks, Natalie, for joining us.
Thank you, Colleen, for having me.
Next up, I think, if I'm correct, we're going to have Encore's Picks. We were considering having the traffic report, bike traffic report, and I can tell you the bike traffic was pretty clear this morning. I rode my bike here all along Cap City Path, and it was lovely. But now we get to hear Encore's picks.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
The Blue Ox Music Festival returns Thursday, June 27 through Saturday, June 29 in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Blue Ox features an integrated three-day experience of live bluegrass, roots, and Americana music, plus music workshops, art installations, and much more. Among the acts this year are the Del Mercury Band, the Sam Bush Band, Pert Near Sandstone, Band of Horses, Art Stevenson and High Water, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, and many others. Full lineup of performers and camping information is at blueoxmusicfestival.com. The Blue Ox Music Festival is Thursday, June 27 through Saturday, June 29 in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. This is WORT 89.9 FM Madison, listener-sponsored community radio.
And now for the Encore's Picks disclaimer.
Encore's Picks are not influenced by any outside entities. Encore consults with an advisory board of one, Encore Malhotra. The cost of admission to any recommended show is of no concern to Encore, nor the price of beer, nor the cleanliness of the venue restrooms. Encore has one goal and one goal only in the delivery of Encore's Picks, for you to have a kick-ass musical experience. Encore's Picks is a trademark of the multinational corporation DJ Spin Cycle. All copy and trade therein is solely possessed. Here's Encore Malhotra!
Good morning, Madison. How's it going? Hope you're sitting tight on your bicycle. And lots of music this weekend. The AC/DC cover band Kathy Detmer is playing at the Crystal Bon Squad tonight. There's a LP record release, Shazy Hayde at the Chris... Shazy Hayde of winter, of spring... The Crystal tomorrow. Tonight is gallery night. Bunch of stuff happening all around town, including yours truly, DJ Spin Cycle. Got a 4-hour all vinyl set at the Textile Arts Center on Pennsylvania Avenue. So hope to see some of you folks there. Tomorrow, DJ DH, Fuzzy Tuck at the Cardinal. There's Paul Gordon throwing down some tunes at Nachspiel, and I'm playing at a secret warehouse party somewhere outside Madison tomorrow. That's it, folks, from Encore's Picks.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. For those of you who weren't here for my first segment, which if you have the opportunity, you should go to WORTFM.org and listen to it later in the archives, because we had Natalie Schad on from the Wisconsin Bike Fed, our Safe Routes to School program manager, and she gave a lot of really great information and some ideas if you want to start a walking school bus or a biking school bus during, well, any time of the year, but May being National Bike Month and next Wednesday being Bike and Walk to School Day, or Walk and Roll to School Day. So we're back here. I'm Colleen Hayes. I'm filling in for Andy Moore here on this morning's 8 o'clock buzz. It's 8:34. That was the one thing I wanted to remember. I always thought, gosh, I love that Andy says the time, because sometimes I'm running around like an idiot in the morning trying to get ready and I want to know what time it is. And I was like, if I was listening to NPR, I'd know what the time is. But now I listen to WRT all the time because Andy Moore tells me the time. It's 8:34 and I am now being joined by Carrie Helmuth. Carrie Helmuth is a born and raised Madisonian who now lives in Italy. So we're talking to her globally. It's an international call. I've never been on an international call. It's very exciting. I've never, except the one time when I traveled to Ireland long before cell phones, and we made a plan to meet a family friend. I was going to stay at her house, and my mother was going to call to make sure I wasn't like killed because I was traveling in Ireland. My first time internationally. So this is my my second international call with Carrie Helmuth. She is the author of Wilkie Sprint, a story of friendship, love, and winning the first women's little 500 race. It was published by Indiana University Press. And as I understand, that is a race that happens at Indiana University. And what I learned was also the basis for the movie Breaking Away, which is a popular film with a lot of folks my age. And Carrie, welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz.
Thank you, Colleen.
And it's so
good
fun
to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's great to hear your voice. It's funny because I saw this thing about this all happened very serendipitously. I always think I'm going to use big words like when I'm on the radio, and then I'm like, oh, do not mess this up, Hayes. You got to sound smart. And I was thinking about, you know, the news director here. She said, well, if you could come up with something that's like cultural, you know, arts or something related to bikes. And I thought, oh, gosh, you know, most of my bike friends are kind of just, you know, not really cultural. And then I saw this article and I was, wait a second. And then I said, oh, you're Anne Helmuth's sister. So I think I met you possibly years ago at a Nitty Gritty downtown for Anne Helmuth's birthday, but I'm not sure if that's true or not.
It is.
Okay, but it's great to have you here now. So Carrie, like I said, you grew up in Madison. Did you go to West High School?
I did. I went to Madison West.
Okay.
And I graduated in 1987, to give you some perspective, 100 years ago, roughly.
Yeah. And so were you much of a cyclist at West? Did they have like a team or anything like that?
No, it was kind of before cycling had hit in the U.S., I would say. And it was a little bit more fringe sport. And so, no, I didn't do any cycling, but I did have a good friend who did some cycling, Heather Hartwig, and she actually features in the book, too, because I mentioned that we started doing, she talked me into doing a triathlon when we were in high school. And so the only experience I had from my high school days was these triathlons that we did during high school, and we did one, and smiling from the podium, I think I say in the book, because we were the only ones in the 15, 16-year-old girl category.
Fun.
Of course, on the podium.
Yeah.
And so we decided to do another. And so I'd done a couple of them, but really the bulk of our training amounted to like a couple trips out to Paoli, which we thought was incredibly far away, and stopped there and laid on the ground near the old well where we pumped some water for ourselves. So. Not too much, but something.
Okay, so then you graduate from West High School and you head to Indiana University?
Exactly.
Okay, and then... Go ahead.
Yeah, we grew up about a couple blocks from Camp Randall, Bingham. So for me, going away to college couldn't be just a couple blocks away, right, downtown. So I thought, like, I want to go away for school. So Bloomington kind of captured my heart on the visit, and so down I went.
Okay. And so, so the Little 500, that's the race that's the name of the race, correct?
It is. And, it's the Little 500 race.
Uh-huh.
It's based on the Indianapolis 500.
Oh, okay.
So that's where the name comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And where the Indianapolis 500 car race, they do 500 miles. The Little 500 bike race, they did 50 miles in the first years. And actually, the men's race still does 50 miles. And so they, you know, they sort of craft the entire race piece by piece after the actual Indianapolis 500. There are pits where you go and you actually have bike exchanges. So you exchange within a pit zone and you have the same flags that they have at the Indianapolis 500. And there's a grand marshal and there are pace stops with pace cars. And so it's kind of fun because they use the Indy 500 as their sort of model.
That's cool. And I love that there's a bike race that's like based on a car race, but it's better because it's a bike race.
Actually, the guy whose idea it was, and the first race was in 1951, he saw some students racing their bikes around campus, racing around the dorm. And his dad had won the Indianapolis 500 car race. And so that's why he used that format, out of respect for his dad, who had actually died in a car crash as a car racer.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And this guy was at that point the president of the IU Foundation, and that's where the idea for the Little 500, the bike race, came from.
Interesting. Okay. And then, when you were a freshman at Indiana University, that was the first year they had women in the race. Is that true?
Yeah, so I got lucky. I showed up in, you know, the fall of 1987, and some women on the Kappa Alpha Theta sorority had fought to get this race, to enter the men's race the year before. So over the years, women had not participated in the Indianapolis, or in the Little 500 as actual teams, and there was no women's race. And so they fought to qualify for the men's race because you needed to qualify, be one of the fastest 33 teams in a qualifications race to get into the race. And they came really close. They basically qualified, but a team that did their quals attempt after them bumped them out of position. And so, but that impetus brought the race to life. And I show up not knowing anything about it. And I was just lucky to benefit from what they and really actually decades of women had done, which is fight the race in the men's race and to enter the men's race and to get a race of their own. So lucky me.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. If you all are just joining us here on WRT, we're talking with Carrie Helmuth. She is the author of a recently published book called Wilkie Sprint, where she talks about her winning, being on the women's team that won the first women's race of the Little 500 over at Indiana University. So Carrie, how did you learn about the race? Like, if you you went to Paoli and laid on the grass and was very proud of yourself, which I'm going to do that someday, Sue. Oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. So, and now that you're out of high school, you could go to Paoli and like go to Paoli pub or go to the schoolhouse and have a beer before you bike back. But so you weren't much of a bike racer. So how did you get talked into racing? Getting into a bike race in your freshman year? I mean, most kids when they're freshmen are a little nervous and they want to, you know, make the right friendships and just kind of figuring their lives out a little bit. And so how did you decide you're going to race in this women's Little 500?
Well, I had done all sorts of sports in high school and really throughout my entire childhood. So it's kind of a little, you know, sporty. I was a jock. And so I, you know, needed to channel that into something, right? And mm-hmm. I showed up and literally at the first dorm floor, so I was in the women's tower of Wilkie Dorm, which is where the name of our team comes from, which is actually the name of the book, is the name of our team that year. And it was the name is Wilkie Sprint. So Wilkie is the name of our dorm, which was named after Wendell Wilkie, who was the first presidential candidate. So we have my dorm meeting with our floor, with the RA. So she's the resident assistant in charge of us, right? And she, I think, was a senior.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, and there's this, you know, giving us all the information about campus, et cetera. And she said, oh, and this year there's a bike race for women. It's the first edition for women this year. And so our dorm is going to have a team. We really want to make sure that we get people interested in. So who's interested? And I kind of like, my hand shot up, right? Because I was like, okay, cool. That sounds fun. Yeah. A bike race.
Yeah.
Right? Because again, cycling really wasn't much of a sport that existed. And it just, I always had loved triathlon days. I'd always loved riding my bike. So,
right.
So I was in from the second I heard about it. And then it slowly grew as we acquired, as we had the first meeting and sort of needed to get enough members. And we fielded both a men's team, so team of freshman college guys in the Wilkie South, which was a men's tower, and a girls' team, and a women's team as well.
Okay, so everyone on your team was from the Wilkie dorm then, you're saying?
They were, yeah. We had one rider who was actually living off campus,
mm-hmm.
But she didn't live in a dorm, so they let her race for us. And it was the first year, so they just wanted teams to be complete as well. So they were happy. A couple teams were like combination teams, two dorms and things. They wanted to have a full field, and they wanted to show kind of IU like, hey, you gave us the race. You gave the women the race. Look at that, how much interest there was.
Sure.
So it was, there was a lot of publicity around, you know, doing the race.
So how many
meetings?
Yeah. How many teams were in the race?
So I think that 31 teams did like there are a series of races leading up to the final race, which is the Little 500 and they're called the Little 500 series. And in the series, we had 31 and maybe even more teams racing. And then, you know, there were a number of people who broke collarbones and got injured or decided not to quit their teams. And so in the end, on race day, there were 30 teams that finished the Little 500, that started and finished the Little 500, the women's race. And 33 teams is a full field for the men, just like the tall race, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty amazing showing for the first year, really.
Yeah. And were you, so when you went into it with your dorm mates, were you thinking that you could win this race, or were you just thinking like, ah, this will just be fun? Were you really gunning to get on the podium? Or?
Well, yeah. I mean, we ended up with kind of a team full of high school athletes, right? So pretty much like me, all of them were like high school athletes and kind of scrappy, right? And so we were not a favorite to win the race, but we, and I talk about the meeting we had the night before the race. We went out for dinner and our coach told us like, hey, we all know that the Thetas, the women who had the Kappa Alpha Theta sorority who had tried to qualify the year before and almost made it into the men's race, and two of whom were still there and had, you know, some new sorority sisters as their companions. You know, we all know the Thetas are kind of expected to win and they were the, you know, kind of considered the strong team, but he said, don't be afraid to win. And it was kind of like this big moment where he was like, open your mind to the possibility that we can win this. I've been watching you guys and you have the talent and blah, blah, blah. He gave us his pep talk. And so we went in hopeful. Yes. I don't think we expected to win. I don't think any of us expected to win. I think we kind of all expected the Thetas to win.
Yeah, that's so fun, though. That's kind of a fun, fun end result, of course. And then you writing a book about it, was this, how did that come about? You just, you know, what made you?
Yeah, so I was contacted in 2020. I live in Italy, right? And mm-hmm. so during the lockdown, I actually got an email, which was probably in about March of 2020. I got an email from Austin Franca Mancia, who's worked on literally films like The Dark Knight Rises and Borat and Chef, so a producer. And he wrote this sort of an email out into, you know, out into nothingness, because I had never known him before or anything. And I get this email saying, like, I want to make a feature film about the women's Little 500 the first year, and I would put you and your team at the center of my film. And so can I give you, you know, can we chat? And I was like, sure, that sounds fun. It's, you know, it's actually ironic because Breaking Away was like such a huge, it was like a cult film for mm-hmm. IU students. It is a cult film for IU students. It's like oftentimes the midnight movie, or it plays all month every April, even though it's from like 1979, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was just exciting to have that connection, you know, where we had actually spoken to the screenwriter for Breaking Away. After we won, he called us and he had said to me, when they make the women's version of my film, or when I write the women's version of the film, who is the actor that would be perfect to play you?
Oh.
And, you know, I'm 18, right?
Yeah.
You know, just on this little bike race. It's an intramural race. It's not a big deal, right? It's
yeah.
literally a race. Sororities versus dorms versus other sororities versus independents. And I was like, oh, wow.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know, but so that suggestion had been in my head really since that moment. He asked each of us that question on the team.
I love it. That's wild. This is such an interesting story. And I wish that I could talk to you about it for the next half hour or more. But I think hopefully maybe you might end up back in Madison for a visit, and we could reconvene with your sister at the Nitty Gritty or some other location. Yeah, I'm just fascinated. I'm so glad I found out about this, because this is a really interesting story. And I got the book on order, actually, so I'm excited to read it. But this is, thanks for joining us. This was really a treat for me to get to talk to you, Carrie. And we can't wait to hear more about, you know, I can't wait to read more about your story. And appreciate you taking the time all the way from Italy, Carrie Helmuth, joining us this morning on the 8 o'clock Buzz. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
And just a shout out to my sister who does Special Olympics, with whom you work.
Yes.
And whose birthday party I met you at the Gritty, which she had every single year since she found out it was the birthday bar. And I promised her I'd say hi to her, because she's they're listening. So,
yes. Okay, good. And I had that in my notes too, that Anne is my favorite Special Olympic athlete. She is phenomenal. She's really a wonderful human. So I'm giving a shout out to Anne as well. Hi, Anne. All right. Thanks, Carrie. So good talking to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
Thanks, you too.
I'm excited I saw that you're talking to India, and so I'm listening. I've got it on here, so I can't wait to hear what she says.
Great.
Thanks,
great.
Colleen.
Take care. Bye. All right, bye. That was Carrie Helmuth. She is the author of the memoir Wilkie Sprint. We'll be up next with some bike safety checks outside. You're listening to WORTFM Madison. Say black, I say white. You say bar, I say bite. You say shark, I say him. And Jaws was never my scene, and I don't like Star Wars. You say Rose, I say Royce. You say God, give me a choice. You say Lord, I say Christ. I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein, or Superman. All I wanna do is buzz, buzz, buzz. I want to ride my I want to ride my bicycle. Races are coming your way, so forget all your duties. Oh yeah, rock bottom girls, they'll be riding today. So look out for those beauties. Oh yeah,
say Wayne.
Hot dog!
I say cooler man, I don't wanna be the president of America.
I say smile,
I say cheese,
Cartier,
I say please,
income tax.
I say Jesus, I don't wanna be a candidate for Vietnam or Watergate. Cause all I wanna do is
ice,
yeah.
I'm still Colleen Hayes, still filling in for Andy Moore, and we are outside the station here of WORT out here on Doty Street, and I have got India Viola with me. She is not necessarily a mechanic, but boy, can she fix things. She is a bike advocate and educator, and India does some work over at the UW-Madison. She's a academic advisor, but more importantly, I think she teaches some repair classes over at the University Bicycle Center.
Resource Center.
Okay, so the University Bicycle Resource Center, I believe, is that over at Helen C. White?
It is. It's okay. It's an underwhelming storage room in the first floor of the garage of Helen C. White. And I think if enough people want to see a better facility, someday we will have one.
Yes. So, yeah, that's, but you do have a lot of resources for university students.
They do.
To use.
So they
that's
have,
great.
They have tools. They have a website where you can see the hours that it's staffed. They have a university student staffing it who's there to help a little bit, mostly just supervise. And then they've got bike stands and tools for you to use. It's open to the community. It's a free and public resource.
Oh, great. Okay, so I could even go in there.
You could go in there, awesome. Colleen. You should go in
great.
There.
Great, I should because, okay, so we have India. She's out here with her bike, okay, and she's going to just talk us through. This is the time of year where I hear a few people are always, you know, they're telling me, they're like, oh, I want to ride my bike, but it's still in the garage and it's rusty. And I'm like, I bet you could just put maybe a little bit of grease and maybe pump the tires and it might be rideable for a little bit until you're able to take it to a mechanic. But so India, what are some basic things folks can do just to get their bikes ready if they've had them just sitting stored away all winter long?
Yeah, Colleen, that's a good question. So bikes are incredibly resilient. They're meant to last a lifetime. And if you take care of them, they can. One of the main things is to just do a visual check of your bicycle. You want to look at the tires. You want to make sure that you don't see any threads, which is the rubber of the tire is actually surrounding a cloth interior. That's the integrity of your tire. So you want to make sure that the tire isn't bursting at the seams, literally. Right. And then airing up your tires. And on the side of your tire, you're going to see some writing. There'll be a brand marking. There might be some other numbers that are hard to decipher. And at some point, it'll say inflate to. And then the units that we're most used to are PSI, pounds per square inch. And a good floor pump is a great thing to have at home. So using a good floor pump that has a gauge on it, and you can pump your tires up to the recommended pressure. That's usually the main thing that needs to happen at the start of the season. You can squeeze your brakes, make sure they're functioning. You can check your saddle and make sure that it's tight. You can do what's called a bike drop, where you pick your bike up about an inch, you drop it and let it, and you, if anything is rattling, you just go and check it out. A great way to get to know your bicycle is just with a damp rag. You can clean your bike on as much as you can't over clean your bike. And when you're cleaning your bike, you're getting close to it, you're looking at it, you're getting familiar with all of the parts and pieces. And as you clean your bike, you might notice something if it's awry. And I think just having a clean bike makes it easier to keep track of what's going on.
Okay, I mean, that actually, the drop bike, I've not heard of that, and that actually makes a ton of sense. And the other thing I was going to ask, particularly, one thing that I get nervous about with my bike in particular is, like, I'm always worried I might overinflate my tires. And so I do try and, you know, but if I'm using, like, say I'm at Machinery Row and I'm using that little bike tire inflator thingy, I'm sure there's a more technical term, how can I make sure that I'm not overinflating my tires, and how often should you probably inflate your tires? I guess it would depend on how often you're riding.
So it's not as dependent on how much you're riding. So I'll give you just a little bit of the ins and outs of inflating your tires so that we can get back to the first question. So the inside of your tire, there's actually an inner tube. The inner tube is a rubber balloon. If you have a rubber balloon that you've inflated recently and you let it sit for a few days, you'll notice it goes flat. So that's actually what happens with your bicycle tire, with your inner tube. So it goes flat because there are little holes in the rubber, little pores that the air that is at higher pressure than the air pressure outside, it wants to come down to regular old 15 pounds per square inch, which is approximately what regular air pressure is. So I would say once a week is a great idea to check your tires. Some stay inflated better than others. The higher pressure that your tire is, so if you have a skinny tire that uses 100 to 120 PSI, that's going to go flat quicker, deflate quicker, because of the difference between atmospheric pressure and the inside of your bike tire. Using the range that's printed on your tire is the best way to know how to inflate your tires. And the bike pumps at the bike shops, luckily, do have governors on them. So it's different than the bike pumps at the gas stations that are meant to fill up a car tire that has a much larger volume. Even though it's a lower pressure, you can overinflate your tire really easily at a gas station. At a bike shop, they're usually governed to come out at a certain rate, and they're not gonna, they're only gonna go up to something that's rated for most bike tires. But you just you want to be checking with a gauge. You can underinflate a little when you're at the bike shop and then go home and top it off with your bike pump that has a gauge.
Great. Well, India, thank you. That was one of my burning questions. I appreciate you answering it. Thanks to WRT for letting us be out here and learning all about bike safety and bike repair and sending it out to the masses. You are listening to WORT 89.9, Madison, Wisconsin. Thank you, Andy Moore. Next week, it might be Jason Joyce, possibly. Nope.
Encore.
It's Encore. Oh, Encore. And thanks to Encore, Elliot, Jim Wilson, my guests, Natalie, Carrie, India right here, and of course, I'm not going to say rock, but gosh, Aaron Schulz helps me every time I'm on WORT-FM, and I really appreciate him immensely. Have a wonderful day, whatever Andy Moore would say.